We're now ready to hear argument from petitioner, from petitioners in the second cause.
May it please the court, Mrs. Carol Young will bring an argument on behalf of the relator.
May it please the court. Briefly stated, the facts that give rise to this action today are that relators, who are each a judge of a district court in Dallas County, Texas, set the salaries for their official court reporters as authorized by Section 52.051 of the Texas Government Code. Thereafter, the Commissioner's Court of Dallas County, Texas, refused to honor these orders. The judges then issued further orders specifically requesting that these orders be complied with and that the salaries be paid as ordered. These issues were ordered without notice or hearing. The commissioners then sought a petition for writ of mandamus against the relators in this cause in the Court of Appeals for the 5th District of Texas at Dallas, alleging that these later orders issued by the relators in October 1987 were in fact writs of mandamus granted without a notice of a hearing. The respondent court granted that writ of mandamus 1982, agreeing that these orders were in fact improperly issued without notice and hearing to the Commissioner's Court. It is this writ of mandamus that relators complain of here today. The issue to be decided is, did the respondent court exceed its writ authority and commit a gross abuse of discretion by finding these later October orders of relators to be writs of mandamus, and by issuing a writ of mandamus ordering relators to vacate these orders? The respondent court did exceed its writ power in issuing the writ of mandamus against relators. The respondent has the authority to issue all writs of mandamus agreeable to the principles of law regulating those writs against a judge of a district or a county court. The respondent court was correct when it stated that to obtain a writ of mandamus, it must be demonstrated that, first, the relator has a clear right to relief. Secondly, that there was a clear violation of a legal duty or an abuse of discretion by the respondent. And thirdly, the lack of any other adequate remedy at law. As will be discussed further, the commissioners failed to demonstrate that they had a clear right to relief. The commissioners failed to show a clear violation of a legal duty or abuse of discretion on relators' part. Relators intend to show that the orders issued were, in fact, lawful and proper. And thirdly, there was another adequate remedy at law, that being a motion to abate under Rule 694 of the Rules of Civil Procedure if the orders were indeed writs of mandamus. Because the commissioners failed to meet these three requirements, the writ issued by respondent was clearly not agreeable to the principles of law regulating writs of mandamus. As such, respondent court exceeded its writ authority and must be ordered to rescind its conditional writ of mandamus granted against relators on January 22, 1988. I'll first address the issue that these orders of October 1987 are not truly a writ of mandamus. They were not issued at the request of the court reporters to have the Commissioner's Court obey the laws of the state of Texas. No formal motions for mandamus were filed in this case. These were simply orders of the court seeking to carry out the duties granted to them under the government code, that being to set the salary of their official court reporter.
The statute doesn't say anything about notice and hearing, does it?
No, it does not. Several courts have recognized the inherent powers of courts to see that their personnel are paid and that the facilities are adequate.
But is this an inherent power question? They got statutory authority to set those up.
They do have statutory authority, and it can be argued two ways. That one is that under the statute, no hearing and notice was contemplated. It's simply the district judges set the salary, and it is to be paid by the court. To hold that the second orders were really writs of mandamus would mean that then initially the judges could not have ordered these salaries to be paid. It would mean that the judges have no way of enforcing this without going on further to a writ of mandamus. Several cases recognizing the authority of the court to force that these salaries be paid have involved cases where the initial order is setting the salary and ordering it to pay. Now, it's true, as the Commissioner's Court alleged, that the cases as reported are writs of mandamus cases. But those are writs of mandamus cases issued after an order to pay has been issued ex parte, without prior hearing and notice.
And ordinarily without statutory authority.
That's correct. Several of these cases from the various states that I have cited in my brief were without the statutory authority, were simply inherent power cases. But they were cases where the order to pay accompanied the actual setting of the salary, or in one case I believe it was in ordering the installing of a new phone system. That was State versus Superior Court of Marion County, courtroom number one.
But you would concede that the Commissioner's Court could contest the amount of the salary.
I do. But that contest...
How would they go about that?
That contest could either come up in two ways. A contempt of court proceeding for failure of the Commissioner's Court to pay, or a hearing on a writ of mandamus by the court reporters attempting to enforce the orders forcing Commissioner's Court to pay. The main point...
So there's no way that the commissioners can take affirmative action themselves to get any review or relief from this order?
The commissioners could request a hearing, but might I point out the statute sets out limits upon which the district court can set a salary. They may increase the salary up to 10%. It is my contention that this is a reasonable limit set by the legislature, giving the power to the district judges. The commissioner's court has no say as long as the limits are within the reasonable limits set. If you want to go beyond the 10% reasonable limit set by statute, you pursue inherent authority sort of thing, and there may be other remedies available under that. But in this context, the judges have set an order well within the 10% limit deemed reasonable by the legislature. And the legislature delegated their duty of setting the salary to the district judges, not giving the commissioner's court any say in the matter.
Do you think that applies to the individual judges, so that some of the judges apparently chose to order the increase and others did not, or at least some are involved in the litigation and others are not? Do you think it's an individual judge's right to order the commissioner's court to increase his or her court reporter, whether or not the rest of them request it?
That's correct. Each district judge is given the power. And I think that's the reasonable way of doing it, in that it is the district judge who has the closest contact with his court personnel, with his court reporter. It is he who knows best the performance of his court reporter and what sort of salary increase is warranted by that court reporter's performance.
Well, of course, if the court reporter requested such action and the judge refused, there could be a problem with the performance.
Well, that's true. Well, of course, under the statute, the court reporters are entitled to up to a 10% increase. And that is totally discretionary with the judge, as it would be with any employer, how much increase to give his personnel.
What's the status of the commissioner's suit for declaratory judgment in respect to the constitutionality of the statute authorizing judges to set the salary?
That case was argued, I believe, late January, January 25th or January 29th, somewhere in that vicinity. It still has not been resolved. No opinion has been rendered on that case yet.
Argued, I take it, in the Dallas Court of Appeals?
It was argued in the district court.
On the district court.
Yes. However, the district judges were not parties to that lawsuit, did not present arguments, did not present briefs.
Who was the defendant in that case?
The individual court reporters.
Did the state of Texas make an appearance? Attorney General on behalf of the
state?
Texas
did make an appearance by its Attorney General.
I have a question that's somewhat off the subject, but I don't want to forget it. What is the staff attorney of the Dallas County Criminal District Court? That's independent from the district attorney's office.
Yes, it is. We generally, our duties are to provide research and assistance to the judges who handle the criminal cases in Dallas County. We help them prepare for motions to suppress and things of that nature. Any sort of research they need done, we try and help them out.
How big is your office?
It's a four-attorney office for the 14 criminal district judges in Dallas.
You must have a generous commissioner's court to authorize you.
Well, we like to think that we save the commissioner's court a lot more money than what we cost them by helping to speed the judicial process and prevent reversals. I hope that that's what we do. We certainly try to.
I don't think anybody on this court is condemning that problem. We'd just like to see more things like that.
I'd like to say that both Smith versus Miller and the State versus Marion County Superior Court, both cases which are cited in my brief, involve the issuance by a judge of an order to pay for personnel facilities without prior notice to obey the order to pay. The hearings involved in those cases were conducted after the orders were issued. Same process is available here. And the fact that the fixation of the salary and the order for payment came at two different times is really those two orders could have been contained in one order, and so the fact that they were separated into two separate ones really doesn't make a difference in this case. They're simply one order. This is the salary. Please pay the salary. Each of those cases, and also Commonwealth X. Rel. Carroll versus Tate, echo the same concerns. That is, that the branches of government have to work together. They have to have cooperation. However, when this cooperation breaks down, the courts must have the power to remain independent and free from the extrinsic influences which may affect the administration of justice. To hold otherwise would open the door to economic retaliation against courts for unfavorable decisions, and could very well lead to the end of an independent judiciary. For example, without this inherent power to require monies for court personnel to be paid, the judge who is now hearing the declaratory judgment action that's related to this action could easily be influenced by county commissioners for fear that his salary and the salaries of his court personnel, as well as monies providing his facilities, could be cut or eliminated altogether by the commissioner's court.
Counsel, there are a lot of district judges and county judges who don't have bailiffs, secretaries all over the state. You're arguing that they have inherent power to order their commissioner's court to fund a secretary, bailiff,
they have,
or any other personnel that the judge thinks is sufficient.
This power exists, but the power must be used when reasonable. That's the key here. Is it reasonable? Is this necessary for the performance of the judge's function? In order to exercise the inherent power, It has to be reasonable and necessary to allow the court to function. In this case...
Well, determines whether or not it's reasonable and necessary.
Generally, that's either an agreement that comes between the commissioners and the judges, or through litigation, the appellate courts will take in evidence, listen to both...
Appellate courts take evidence.
Well, I'm sorry. There will have to be a hearing in the appellate, in the trial court to decide...
We didn't have one here.
That's correct. But statute, in this case, a statute sets out what is reasonable. The legislature has already determined that a 10% increase is reasonable in this instance, anything up to a 10% increase. So we presume that this is what the legislature determined to be reasonable. Anything beyond that would be, I believe, presumed to be unreasonable and would require notice in the hearing.
Did the legislature provide a reasonable appropriation to pay for it?
Now that's the duty of the...
While they were being reasonable?
That's the duty of the local commissioners, and unfortunately commissioners do not have a pleasant job, and there are many instances where the legislature has put a duty on the commissioners to fund certain programs. Unfortunately, I don't have all those with me at the moment. The Attorney General presented an excellent argument on that at the declaratory judgment. But that really goes to whether or not this statute is constitutional. And that's not truly the issue here. That's the issue being decided in the declaratory judgment. A writ of mandamus is not the proper forum to decide the constitutionality of statutes. That's an unsettled question of law and is best decided by a declaratory judgment action.
In essence, your argument that the district judges have the authority to issue an order and that the Court of Appeals erred in saying that they have to conduct a hearing on mandamus, is that what this case is all about from your standpoint?
Yes. The basis is that not that they're in error that a hearing is necessary on a writ of mandamus, but that these orders were a writ of mandamus. These orders were not a writ of mandamus. They were the order accompanying the salary, the order setting the salary. For instance.
Are you, before you get to the for instance.
Okay.
Are you saying this is based on inherent power of a judge, or are you saying it's specific statutory authority?
I'm saying it is specific statutory authority which is drawn from this general notion of inherent power of the courts to remain independent.
Well,
in other
the
words,
Dallas County Commissioners probably, and I don't know, but I would suspect they supplement the pay of each district judge in Dallas County somewhere in the neighborhood of $21,000 per year per judge.
Correct.
Let's say they elected to cut that supplementation off. Would the judges have the authority to say, no, you can't, and we're ordering you to pay us full supplementation?
In that instance, the only recourse that judges would have would be, since there is no statutory authority on this, would be to institute their inherent authority, at which point it would have to be determined in a lawsuit that the judge's increased salary was reasonable and necessary to continue the duties of the court.
You're saying there it'd have to be determined in a lawsuit, which in effect is what the Fifth Court of Appeals said in respect to this case, that it's got to be determined in a lawsuit, which is contrary to your argument that the judge has got the authority just to issue an order and the commissioner's court has to follow it.
Well, the Court of Appeals jumped the gun. The statute gives the judges the right to set a salary without notice and hearing.
And that's presumptively valid until set aside by the commissioner's court, is your
correct
argument.
Isn't there a statutory requirement that before you reduce the pay of anyone on the county payroll, especially an official, we must make it effective if the next time the office comes up for election.
You may be correct. I'm not well versed in that area of law, and I'm not aware of that.
Counsel, isn't your argument that the Commissioner's Court has no power to refuse to fund an increase for court reporters that is not exceed 10%?
Yes.
You're saying, is that your argument?
Yes. Pursuant to the statute.
As long as it's within 10% increase, they have no authority, they have to fund it.
That's correct.
They have to find the money somewhere.
That's correct.
Your argument. Or you reduce it from all, everything else.
That's correct.
What do you think is the relief of the commissioners? That they need to initiate litigation on what basis? Other than constitutionality, that it was an unfair increase or no ability to comply with it or something like that?
Or go back to the legislature.
Exactly. It's either going to have to be that the statute is unconstitutional, or they need to have the law changed.
When can they, from your argument, when can they attack the constitutionality? Can't you always attack the constitutionality of the statute?
Through a declaratory judgment action, they could attack.
You say they can't attack it in this proceeding?
No, because a writ of mandamus, there has to be clear, settled law. It has to be a clear abuse of their discretion. I believe it was State Ex Rel Wade v. Mays, which I believe is also cited in my brief, that stated that the constitutionality of the statute is not to be determined in a writ of mandamus. That's an unsettled question of law, and as an unsettled question of law, is not a proper consideration in a writ of mandamus. You cannot prove a clear right to your remedy when you're arguing whether or not this statute says this or this statute says that. It's not clear.
Shouldn't we economize everybody's time if we would debate this action until the constitutionality of the statute is decided?
Well, that in this instance, that would save a lot of time. However, it still leaves the issue undecided as to whether or not this sort of an order is actually a writ of mandamus. However, it would, once the constitutionality of the statute is determined, it would resolve the issue here, as commissioners have stated in their orders that if it's decided that it is constitutional, they will go ahead and pay the increase as ordered by the district judges.
If it were, hypothetically, a writ of mandamus, perhaps this is a question I'll pose to Mr. Lynn. Who would be filing the suit? It wouldn't be the district judges filing a mandamus action in their own court. It'd have to be some other party.
It would be the court reporters attempting to have the commissioner's court obey the law. In saying that relators could not issue these October orders, would be the same as saying allowing commissioner's court to refuse salaries for instance, under the government code, Chief Justice has the authority to assign appellate court justices to sit on appeals courts outside there where they reside, outside the region in which they reside. Right. Under that statute, the commissioner's courts in that appellate region must pay the salary of that court, of that justice. Could not then the commissioner come back and say, well, no, this is a writ of mandamus telling us we have to pay this. We don't have to pay it because we didn't receive notice in the hearing before you assigned that justice. By the same token, the salary of the presiding judge is set by the Texas Judiciary Council. There's no hearing or notice requirement there. Could not the commissioner say, we're not paying that salary. That's a writ of mandamus telling us to pay. We're required to have notice in the hearing before we're going to pay that salary. Could not a sitting judge or a retired judge, when he's assigned to sit somewhere, say, no, I'm not going to sit. That's an order of mandamus telling me that I have to sit in another court. You didn't give me notice and hearing before you said, assign me to this other court. There's several instances like this where the court, in simply saying that something be done, is not necessarily issuing a writ of mandamus.
Any legislative history of why the legislature quit trying to pass a pay raise for each court reporter in the state every time they met and put on the 10% limit and said, okay, it's up to you district judges?
I don't know if there is legislative history. I would guess that the reason for that is that it just became too cumbersome to go through district by district trying to decide what each court reporter should get. That it was easier to allow the district judge who was involved with that reporter to decide what the salary should be. But as far as what the actual history was, I'm not aware of it.
That also let the district judge keep the court reporter salary lower than his, would
it? Yes, it certainly would. Although the legislature could remedy that also.
There's a more fundamental question involved here, and that's the duty of the legislature adequately to fund district judges and their personnel rather than pushing it off on the county. And right now, about all the state pays on a state officer is a $55,000 a year part of his salary, and all the rest of the expense is borne by the county.
I believe that's probably correct, yes.
Historically, why were counties created?
Again,
They were created to establish a home for and support for the local court system. And that primary function has not changed through the years, has it?
Well, it does provide a home for, however, the state is now providing at least some support, is at least helping out the counties on the local, for the local court system. But yes, the counties do pay for the court systems, and the counties receive the benefit. I mean, it is the people of Dallas County who receive the benefit of having the judges sitting there and convicting the criminals and whatnot, and being able to hear their cases and have them tried. Going on, assuming for the sake of argument, that the commissioners and the respondents are correct, and these orders are writs of mandamus. In that case, there was another adequate remedy at law. Rule 694 of Texas Rules of Civil Procedure provides that if a writ of mandamus is issued without notice of a hearing, a motion to abate may be filed, and a notice of hearing had. Commissioners did not file this motion. In fact, the Court of Appeals stated in their opinion on page 13 that they didn't believe that the respondents would grant such a motion. I'd like to read from you their quote. It says, however, the arguments presented to this court indicate that the three respondents do not believe that they should grant such motion. Therefore, it appears that if we were to deny a relator's petition for writ of mandamus as to these last October orders, we would in effect be directing the filing of motions in the three trial courts which would not be granted by these respondents. I'd like to point out the language of the arguments indicate. They don't believe they should. Therefore, it appears that if they were to deny. These words do not create the clear and unequivocal proof that a writ of mandamus requires before it may be issued. The Court of Appeals was simply speculating as to what they thought the judges might do had these motions been filed or should they be filed in the future. This court stated in State v. Thornton that the Supreme Court, could not speculate as to what the lower court would do and then grant a writ of prohibition or mandamus based on that speculation. That it was better to wait until the action was taken and then have the action refiled at that time. In conclusion, the respondent court acted in excess of its writ authority. It committed a gross abuse of discretion in granting the petition for writ of mandamus against relators. And we would request that this petition be ordered rescinded by this court.
Thank you, counsel. We are now ready to hear argument from the respondent.
Next, court, Mr. Earl Linda will present argument on behalf of the respondent.
Police court. We have involved here several orders that the judges have entered, and I think it might be helpful if we just go very quickly through those and talk about the orders that we are not talking about as well as the one we are. The statute involved requires the, or authorizes a judge to set the salary of a court reporter. And it orders them to do it prior to, or it authorizes them to set it prior to June 1. Well, the statute says September 1, but when you roll back the fiscal year, it moves it back to June 1. So our Court of Appeals has held that an order must be entered by the judge setting the salary not to exceed 10% on or before June 1. Now, there is only one order that complies with that June 1 deadline, and that order is one by the judge that simply, or each of the three judges, simply says the court reporter's order, the court reporter's salary is set at a certain figure. Now, the order then that the judge is authorized to enter under the statute, of course, is not before us here, and it has not been argued as to the validity of it or what it means. But suffice it to say in passing that the statute simply requires them to send it to the commissioner's court. There is no requirement in the statute for the commissioner's court to set it at that exact figure. So it may be, and the court has not passed on this, it may be that what we're talking about is something that is input to the commissioner's court. Otherwise, you're going to wind up with court reporters, and if you have 60, 70 court reporters in the county, some of them will be at one salary and some will be at another salary, because if you take this literally, that a judge may set it at 10%, then one may have a much lower salary than another. But that is the way the statute reads. Now, after the commissioner's court met and approved a 3% raise for all county employees, including the court reporter, some judges were obviously acceptable to it. Some obviously were not. What do you do then? What they concluded to do was to issue a second order. That second order was issued after the budget had been approved and up in October. And that order was for the judge, for the commissioner's court to appear and show cause why they shouldn't be held in contempt of court. Now, this becomes the reason for the extra orders. As we talked about it, and as I talked with the lawyers who represent the judges, look at that order. Doesn't order anybody to do anything. How are you going to hold somebody in contempt for that June, for that May order, where the court, the judge simply set the salary and didn't order the commissioner's court to do anything? So they decided then, we passed that. We didn't have that hearing on motion for contempt. Because after looking at the order, it clearly didn't order anybody to do anything. So they issued the third order. And that's the one that is before this court today. All three of the orders issued by each of the judges are identical. The third order was one to require the commissioner's court to pay the salary in the amount in the amount of 10%. And that one purports to be under the court's inherent powers. So they there seem to be saying, forgetting about the statute, they seem to be saying that we have the inherent power to set it. Now they do reference the statute in the order, and they do reference the May order that each of them entered, requiring for some reason they decided to cut off the salary of a constable, I believe it was, and who served the citation. So under those circumstances, the court said that they had the inherent power, that courts have the inherent power to see to it that the judicial process works. But that's not the, that was a dollar a year. They set the salary of a dollar a year there. That's not what we have in our case. In our case, the salaries were set at a 3% increase over last year, and all of the court reporters in Dallas County, including these three, are working under it. So it's not something that kept the judicial system from working. The Commissioner's Court even went a step further. They said that they wanted to test the constitutionality of that statute, and they entered an order saying that if the court finds that the statute is indeed constitutional, that they will pay these reporters not only the 3% that they're paying now, but they will pay them retroactively 3% from the 5%, an additional 2% from the time it started. Now, the way then that they chose to test the constitutionality of the statute is, as you've heard before, is by filing the suit for declaratory judgment, and the defendants in that case are the ones who get the money in the court for. The judges could have, but didn't choose to intervene in that case, and of course we're not obligated to. So that case has been argued, and we're awaiting a decision, which could come just any day now. The judge has heard all of the arguments and all of the final briefs, and could decide any day. So, in the Court of Appeals, found that the order number one was not sufficient to base a contempt hearing on. So then that they didn't challenge that in this hearing. So that stands unchallenged, that order number one is not sufficient for a contempt hearing. Then as they started to look at order number three, then the court questioned counsel about exactly what is it. Now, they want to say that it is some kind of order for the inherent under the inherent powers of the administration of justice. Now, if it's an administrative hearing order, of course, it's entered too late. That should have been in June. If it's a mandamus, it might not be too late. But a mandamus, they're supposed to give somebody a hearing. And that's what the Court of Appeals said you didn't do. The statute, the law is very clear that in a mandamus case, you just don't issue a mandamus against somebody without a hearing. And that's what happened in this case. Had they given a hearing, then the Commissioner's Court could have, and I think contrary to what counsel said a while ago, might easily have raised the question of before we have the mandamus issued in that evidentiary hearing and argument on the law, the constitutional question might have been asked. So where are we then if in fact a mandamus has issued The Cleveland case that we cited is one of the very early cases, Cleveland versus Ward, back in 1926. This court held that because of due process as declared by this court from an early date, to the effect that such extraordinary writs will issue unless the interested parties are before the court. Can't issue a writ of mandamus unless the interested parties are before the court. Commissioner's court were not before. We were in constant conversation every day. Yet this order for mandamus was issued without the opportunity for a hearing on the part of the commissioner's court. Now, I think the reason they want to say it's not a mandamus is that to know the law is clear, that if it's a mandamus, they can't issue a mandamus without giving somebody a hearing. Now, they do say, however, that if it is a mandamus, although the law says that it's illegal to issue them without a hearing, if you request a hearing after they've been issued, the rule requires the judge to set it aside. But here, if this is a mandamus, the Court of Appeals found there was no need for a hearing because the judges say it's not a mandamus and they got no intention of setting it aside. They don't agree that that's what it is. Therefore, the Court of Appeals said that the Commissioner's Court has exhausted all of its remedies. Because although the Court of Appeals said that this is a mandamus and is something that should be set aside, even to this good day, and then this argument before this court, and then the briefs, they continue to say it's not a mandamus. They say, now, if it is mandamus, they ought to come back and ask us to set it aside. But first, their position is, it's not a mandamus. And I think the Court of Appeals was right. There's no reason to believe that when they come before the Supreme Court of Texas and say it's not a mandamus, there's no reason to believe that if the Commissioner's Court went to that court, they'd change their mind. This is something that's been considered for a good long while, and the judges are convinced that it's not a mandamus. But yet, they issued an order ordering a public official to take some action without giving the public official an opportunity for a hearing.
Well, let me ask you this, Mr. Lynn. One of our relators here is Judge Chapman, and I want to use him because of his combined position as a district judge and then the presiding judge, administrative region. By law, Judge Chapman is given the right to assess each county within his region a certain amount of money for the support of his office. Let us say that Dallas County Commissioner's Court does not pay that assessment. Would they be entitled to a hearing in front of Judge Chapman on that?
I think so. I think they'd be entitled to, if they, now just on the first administrative hearing, the answer, I believe, starts out being no. But if they have economic problems where they can't and they need to ask him for consideration, I believe they'd be entitled to a hearing to show him why we can't comply with your order if in fact they could.
All right, second question. Judge Chapman has the authority to bring in a retired or former judge to sit. Let's say he assigns Judge Leonard Hoffman, hypothetically, to sit in a as a retired or former judge in the court. And of course, then Judge Chapman has to approve Judge Hoffman's voucher to be reimbursed. And the Commissioner's Court does not pay Judge Hoffman. Judge Chapman got to conduct a hearing on that?
I don't think so on that, because those items are built into the budget at the beginning of the year on the recommendation of the judges as to how many it's going to be and how much. And that would go to the fact that you have a judge or you don't have a judge. So when we get into something that would absolutely stop the court and keep the court from functioning, now that's where I think you may get into some to a different argument of inherent power. And in this case, though, we're not talking about, in our opinion, the inherent power level. We're talking about a level that dozens of court reporters are very happy and pleased to work for. But three court reporters in the county and their employers are not. So I think that's different from the level of not being able to operate the court at all.
Well, did the Commissioner's Court make any response to these first two orders you mentioned? You were saying they had no notice of the third order, and therefore they felt like if it were a mandamus, they didn't get notice. You don't consider these first two orders any kind of notice to them that something was afoot, there is an increase?
Oh yes. We do consider that they were notice that something was afoot, because you see the first orders under the statute were the first order under the statute was one that
it was timely, but it was not an order, it was just a notice, wasn't it?
Right. It's just an administrative order setting the salary.
Make any response to that?
They did in the hearings before the Commissioner's
before
Court.
The budget. And
there was testimony in the budget process on it. And the way, I don't know, in our county,
every county does it its own way.
Yeah.
Okay. But now, did they then tell the judges we're refusing your request?
Yes. Okay. They surely did. They surely did. And the way they did that, after the first order was entered, the way they actually gave the notice to them formally was in setting the budget and giving the reporters across the board 3% raise.
Same that they gave all county employees.
Right. So that's the way they notified them, and hence the second order. The second order being the order that the judges entered saying that we want you to appear on a certain day and show cause why you shouldn't be held in contempt for not complying with the first order. And that's when I started talking with their counsel and said, well, didn't order them to do anything. How are you going to hold them in contempt? So after they got to looking at it, then they decided not to move forward on order number two, but they decided then to issue order number three. And that one just came out of the blue, and out of the blue without a hearing. If it had been a hearing, we'd had an opportunity to raise some of these things that we're talking about. And I think on final hearing, this case that is now pending, that we'll get one of three decisions. One, if the court is able to harmonize the statute with the Constitution, if it would find it's otherwise constitutional, the court might hold that since this statute does not require the Commissioner's Court to set it, authorizes the judges to set a figure, which goes to, it simply says they send it to the Commissioner's Court. The statute does not say that is the salary the Commissioner's Court will pay. So it may simply be information, as all other county departments make recommendations to the Commissioner's Court. That's one thing the court could hold. A second thing the court could hold is that the statute is unconstitutional based on Attorney General Maddox, as you know, found last year that the rollback statute on counties was unconstitutional because it interfered with the Commissioner's Court budget authority. Now, under that theory, they might hold that this statute is unconstitutional, interfering with the budget-making powers of the Commissioner's Court. Now, it's been held constitutional in Wichita County case, but that was a different section of the Constitution. In that case, they weren't looking at the one that General Maddox talked about. they were looking at the provision of the Constitution that talks about you can't incur debt without a budget being paid. So this issue that was raised in the Attorney General's opinion this year has not been litigated. Of course, the third thing that the court might hold is that it is constitutional. In the latter case, there's not going to be any contempt of court because the commissioners have already entered an order saying that if the courts finally rule it's constitutional, we're going to pay it. And the case that we've cited in our brief, Johnson versus the fourth Court of Appeals down in San Antonio, we both cite that in the brief, and I'd just like to comment on it just a bit. And I think it's altogether different, though, from our case, because in that case, it involved a situation where a plaintiff had filed a damage suit. A lady had been raped at some apartments and was suing the security people, and then the judge granted her a new trial. And the other side thought the defendants thought they ought to have a judgment. And based on just the court's feeling of the general rules of fairness, the court granted a new trial. The Court of Appeals granted a mandamus against him to enter a judgment for the defendant. Well, the Supreme Court held that that's a discretionary thing. And the court has broad discretion where you're talking about something that that directly affects the fairness and the general rules of fairness in the trial of a lawsuit. And therefore, the Supreme Court mandamused the Court of Appeals and told them to set aside their order to the district court. But this is not that kind of case. We don't have that type of general discretion on the part of the judge. The judge in this case, at most, had two sources of power. And I'm not really clear which one they claim order number three comes under. Maybe both. But those two sources of power, number one is the statute we've talked about, and number two, the general inherent powers of the court.
Well, is this any different from the judge's order to pay attorney's fees? He just sends an order to pay attorney's fees to the commissioners, and if they've exhausted their budgetary line item for a court-appointed attorney, they still have to pay it, don't they?
Yeah, but that's court costs.
That's
court costs. And I think...
But it's still an order is the way that they receive the information, by way of an order probably similar to your first order.
Right. But it's you know, if that's directly to the commissioner's court. See, this one is different. This statute is different from those that...
But it is an inherent power of the court to order the attorneys to be paid. There is an inherent power that the judge has to exercise.
Well, now there's some statutes on it now. If it's inherent, it didn't used to be, because I've been pointed on a lot of cases back years ago when we didn't get paid.
So have I, but I think now the judge may order attorneys.
Oh yes, but there's statutes. There's statutes authorizing that, and it's part of the general court call. And I think in looking at those statutes that those circumstances are something different from these because you got a constitutional right involved when you have a defendant for whom the court has appointed an attorney. Now. The courts have enforced those constitutional rights and said that he's got a constitutional right to counsel.
And some of these smaller counties have had their budgets totally destroyed.
Well, yes, but that's because of constitutional rights. And
you
don't
think the judge has a constitutional right to run his court and have it staffed and have control of his employees?
I think clearly he has a constitutional right to run his court. But I don't think he has constitutional right for the expenses to be whatever he might decide in some cases. Certainly, he must have, under the inherent powers, a reasonable salary for the court reporter. And then somebody's got to decide what that is. the majority of the judges in Dallas County, for example, thought reasonableness was 3%.
But in the event there is conflict between the judge and the commissioner's court, who do you think should decide?
Well, that's the whole thing that's in the merits of this other case. We think in this kind of a case, we believe that it may be in the budget-making power of the commissioner's court, and that this what this statute does is give input to the judges on what they think it ought to be. Now, we want to be very sure that we distinguish that, though, from the case where they set some process server salary of $1 a year. Now, if they had set these court reporter salary $1 a year, well, we wouldn't even be here. You know, that would be.
If all that is the judge's suggestion, why in the world does it need a statute in the first place? Why in the world did they need a statute telling the judge he could suggest to the commissioner's court what the court report ought to be paid? If it's nothing more than a suggestion.
Well, what's that? I don't know that I don't know that it is not more than that it is more than a suggestion or that it is not. It hasn't been tested in that regard, and I simply said that in the declaratory judgment suit, they're taking the position that the statute what's before the court is it's unconstitutional. Now, as we know, of course, in trying to keep from holding a statute unconstitutional, courts have to interpret it, or if they can interpret it in a reasonable manner that it will not be unconstitutional, they generally do so. And it seems to me that that's one thing that a court might say, if a court didn't want to say it was unconstitutional, is that I've looked at the statute, and the statute does say that the judge can set it, but it does not require the commissioner's court to include that particular item in its budget. And therefore, it must come as input or recommendation to the commissioner's court, but it requires it to file it with. The statute does require them to file it with the commissioner's court, but it doesn't take the next step and say, the commissioner's court shall include that amount of salary in its budget for that person or those persons. That's the merits of this other case, so and I don't know what the court's going to
do. Let me ask you about that other case for just a minute. Does the commissioner's court say that it will pay if the district court decides that the statute is constitutional, or we got to wait for that case to come all the way up here to us?
Well, I hope we don't have to wait for that case to come all the way up to you. But the way the order reads is if the court finally determines, and therefore I think it could be interpreted as being
all
the appellate decision.
It's a practical matter whoever loses is going to appeal.
Sir?
It's a practical matter whoever loses, the district court's going to appeal. And whoever loses, the court of appeals is going to appeal to us.
Might.
Of course, the constitutionality of a statute involved, it could come directly to us, could it not?
Could. That could short circuit a whole lot if it did that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much.
Are there any questions? Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you, sir.
May it please the court, Mr. Luna raised several points alluding to the validity of the original orders. One being that the Court of Appeals found that several of the original orders not valid as that they were untimely filed. I'd just like to point to footnote 1 of the Court of Appeals decision saying that that was an issue in a declaratory judgment and specifically was not before the Court of Appeals and was not a part of their decision. As to whether or not the orders were timely filed, I don't think that you can just say that they were untimely filed because that's going to determine it's going to depend on how you apply the statute, which forces the rollback to the prior June 1st date. 52.051 actually requires the orders to be filed by September 1st. There is a provision saying that if the county goes to a fiscal year starting October 1st, then you move those times back if the statute was enacted based on a January calendar year. I don't think we can presume the statute was enacted on January calendar year, in that it says that the salary has to be in by September 1st, 30 days before the normal fiscal year would begin. And that's a decision that's going to have to be decided in the declaratory judgment. It's not before this court. I'd also like to say that in issuing the second orders, it was not strictly on Mr. Luner's advice that our original orders could not be supported by a contempt motion that we issued these second orders. Several factors went into it. If it was, as Mr. Luner said, then we would not have stood in the Court of Appeals and argued that, in fact, these orders could support a contempt order. Again, I want to emphasize that whether these orders were laid or all the issues in the declaratory judgment are not the issue before this court this time. The issue before this court is, were these orders writs of mandamus? That's what the Court of Appeals said they were. That's what relators claim they are not. That's why the mandamus issued, because we did not give notice and hearing on a writ of mandamus. The commissioners cite the case of Cleveland versus Ward. Cleveland does not stand for the proposition that the orders, that saying the orders are writs of mandamus are not, does not mean that they are writs of mandamus or not writs of mandamus. Cleveland involved a writ of mandamus and prohibition action against the Court of Appeals and a district court, in which they were attempting to force a case to trial in one court and preventing another district court from hearing the case. The case simply stands for the fact that notice and hearing must be given prior to the issuance of a writ of mandamus. It does not stand for the proposition that notice and hearing were required for this type of order that the judges issued.
Counsel, let's assume that this third order is an exercise of the inherent power of those district courts. In the exercise of the inherent power of the court, does the court have to give notice and hold a hearing before it can issue a final order for the commissioner's court to pay the court reporters?
No, it wouldn't under the inherent powers. Under the cases cited in my brief, each of those had a order to pay issued before the writ of mandamus was filed. And it was the court determined what it needed, issued the order to pay, and then a writ of mandamus arose out of that scenario.
Because the commissioners failed to pay?
I believe in one case it was, I'm not positive on this, I believe one case it was because of failure to pay. I think one case was an attempt to force the order to be vacated. I'm not sure on that.
Okay, but on the mandamus order then, does there have to be a notice and hearing?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So, but the court, what you're saying is the court can exercise its inherent power and say to the commissioner's court, you got to pay this court reporter's 5% raise. And then if the commissioner's court does not do that, then he can issue a mandamus, but then he has to tell him we're going to have a notice and hearing, and you can come forth and show why you ought not be held in contempt or whatever for failure to pay.
That's correct.
Would a procedure be possible if the commissioner can agree with the order for them to file a motion to rescind the order? They felt they could not comply with something.
That's not contemplated by the statute.
In fact, they could certainly, that they have any recourse by the statute.
Not under the statute. They do not have any recourse.
No recourse, either.
No.
Well, the mechanics are, if the Commissioner's Court doesn't pay it, the court reporter sued the Commissioner's Court to get a judgment, and then it's up to the District Court to order the Commissioner's Court to levy sufficient taxes to pay the judgment, isn't it?
That's correct. Well, yes, it's up to them to order the judgment to be paid, and the Commissioner's Court will have to decide where to levy taxes. I also want to point out that Mr. Luna referred to the Attorney General's opinion dealing with rollback tax elections. The Assistant Attorney General Bledsoe appeared at the declaratory judgment and specifically argued that that Attorney General's opinion did not stand for the proposition that this is an unlawful taxing by requiring unlawful taxing by district courts and ordering a salary increase. In essence, he argued it did not stand for that proposition, and Mr. Luna is asserting that it does. Also, in Commissioner's Court versus Wichita County versus Griffin, that case was a mandamus case, and it was a case involving an almost identical fact situation. There, the court reporters brought the mandamus, and the Commissioner's Court alleged that the statute was unconstitutional. There, it was held that it was a lawful delegation of a duty by the legislature, and that the statute was constitutional, although not on the specific ground that the commissioners are raising at this point. It did not hold that mandamus was the appropriate remedy for the judges. It held that mandamus would lie where the court reporters brought a suit to compel payment for their salaries, which is a ministerial duty on the part of the commissioners. As far as the notice as to refusal to pay the salaries, the district judges entered their orders back in late May, early June of 1987. Nothing was ever done on those orders until after October 1st, when the effective date of the salaries was to begin. After that date, the commissioners then passed the budget saying we're only giving the court reporters a 3% pay increase. So several months went by there where negotiations could have been going on, but the commissioners just felt, for some reason, that noticed that they weren't going to pay was necessary. And finally, to argue that the statute simply provides that judges recommend to the commissioner's court what the salary should be, that would mean that the legislature has done a meaningless act. If they have no way of enforcing that salary, there would be no need for the legislature to say the judges can suggest a salary for their court reporter if they want to. It would be simply a meaningless act, and the legislature cannot be presumed to have done a meaningless act.
So you're saying it's non-discretionary?
That's correct. In fact, I believe in Commissioner's Court versus, I'm sorry, Wichita County versus Griffin, I believe it was, that they said it was a ministerial act on the part of Commissioner's Court to pay that salary. Finally, I'd like to point out to the court the Supreme Court citing Sessoms versus Botts, and in that case, this court exclusively refused to approve the right of a ministerial officer to pass upon the constitutionality of a legislative act, and expressly held it was the duty of the officer to execute the law and not pass judgment upon the law. In this case, the Commissioner's Court is doing expressly what this court has held that they cannot do. They are ruling themselves on the constitutionality of the law and refusing to obey it. As such, they must accept the consequences for their actions and cannot be protected.
Any questions? Thank you, Kim. These causes are submitted on brief.